Let me just start by some remarks regarding the last lecture. So I was proving the Erde-Schrader canonical partition theorem, and then Menachem Kozman pointed out that the original proof is, well, in some sense, maybe simpler than what I gave. So I'm just going to sketch the original proof very quickly. So, the original proof of Erde-Schrader. So it's also by induction on D, and well, the proof, the case D equals 1 is proved in the same way, of course. The problem is larger D. So what do we have? We have function f, which maps n to D plus 1 into some set Y. And now what we do is we increase dimension. We know that Ramsey's theorem is true for any d, in particular for 2 times d plus 2. So now for s, which is a subset of n that has 2d plus 2 elements, define an equivalence relation on this set, on d plus 1 element subsets of 2d plus 2, as follows. So some u is related to v if and only if f of u is equal to f of v. Well, this is just a natural equivalence relation. Then well, what do we have? We can enumerate all equivalence relations on this set. And now, for any 2d plus 2 tuple, the equivalence relation that we have is just isomorphic to one of those. So define function g that maps 2d plus 2 tuples into E, where E is all equivalence relations on this set, 2d plus 2 to d plus 1, in just obvious way. So g of some 2d plus 2 tuple is just the corresponding equivalence relation. And apply Ramsey's theorem. It's a finite set. You don't really have to bother computing how many elements there are, but it's clear it's finite. It's at most 2 to d plus 2, or something like that. So apply Ramsey. And once you do that, you get to the point where I decided not to present this proof. It becomes a little bit messy at this point. You have to consider, well, a little bit, in a sense. You have to consider two different cases. A good case is that the equivalence relation that you get, you see, Ramsey's theorem just gives you one equivalence relation, it just repeats in any 2d plus 2 element pattern. If the equivalence relation that you get is everything, it just means that the function is constant. Oh, where is S? Oh. Right. So sure. So just write S is n0 up to n2d plus 1. And I just, you know, just the obvious bijection between.
On the fourth line relation on 2d.
Right. So it's, yes, right, sure. S to d plus 1, right. So you just look at the isomorphic copy of this. So case 1. Okay, so I apply Ramsey and get infinite set. So get A in n to omega, which is G homogeneous. Now, if F restricted to D plus 1 element subsets of A is constant, well, then we're done. Then X is just going to be D plus 1. If not, you have to work a little bit harder. You need to prove that you can ignore one of the elements of that set.
The other way around.
Thank you. X is empty. Yes, yes, okay, right. No, but I was using your proof and you said you're using X as a complement. So in that case, X is empty set and just the function is constant. If not, well, then there are two elements in this A. So otherwise, there are S and T that are both D plus 1 element subsets of A, such that F of S differs from F of T. Well, since function differs, then it means that S and T are also different. And we can look at the first place where S and T disagree. So maybe their minimums are equal, maybe the next element is equal, but at some point they're different. So let J less than D plus 1 be the first place at which S and T disagree. Now, you have to use the fact that the homogeneous set is infinite and it looks everywhere the same. So you just take, there are a few more steps. I'm not going to go through the proof. I'll just leave the rest details for you to check. But by using saying that A is infinite, you can just add freely elements between S and T. You can prove that actually F simply does not depend on the jth element of particular set.
Right.
Thank you. Okay, just, Yes, so the other case was when F is 1:1. 1:1, in which case X is equal to D plus 1. Thank you, right. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right, so easy case is 1:1 and difficult case is constant. Okay. Yes. So you have two different, but then I have to say explicitly that S is different from T. So you find place at which S and T disagree, and then you just prove that, prove that F of any element U does not depend on J's element of U and use induction hypothesis. So I'm leaving some details here, but I guess this should be. But I don't know how large the dimension can help you. Essentially, what? Oh, but you cannot get it. Not just a function can depend on minimum. It can be something like that. You know, even if D is equal to 2, actually D is equal to 1 here. It is you have to go through the messy part. I guess this is just proof. This proof is messy business. Somewhat messy. So this was just the line to previous lecture. Now for today, I'll be talking more about Banach spaces this time. But first, I just want to state one lemma, which is somewhat slight generalization of something that I proved last time. So if D is natural number and F maps D tuples from N into the real numbers, and moreover F has a compact range or bounded range in this case, let's say. So and the range of F is bounded, so when I said compact I meant relatively compact. Its closure is compact. Then there is an infinite subset of all natural numbers such that the following expression limit, I say limit as minimum of S approaches to infinity, where S is a member of N to D. So I guess it's clear what I mean by this. You just without thinking, A to D. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So I hope this is it's clear what I mean by this. Just I'm just thinking of limits in this term. Essentially, you can think of it just as iterated limit D times. So this limit of F of S exists. So I have proved case D equals 1 last time, and the general case is just essentially that was the first step of induction, and you just use diagonalization lemma over and over. So just well, let me just sketch it. So proof by induction. Case D equals 1 is last time. So assume that we have proved for D and fix F that maps N to D plus 1 into the reals that has all the assumed properties. And now just fix the first natural number. Fix M. So for M in N, define G sub M mapping N slash n to d into r by g sub m of some set s is simply f of singleton m union s. So we just look at what comes later and compute f at this point. Well, the induction case just tells us that the set of all infinite sets on which each G sub, fixed G sub M has limit is dense. So, by the induction hypothesis, F of F sub M, which is set of all A, such that limit as minimum of S approaches to infinity and S is member of this A to, well, actually, I should call it B, I guess. A is the set at the end. S is the element subset of B. The G M of S is equal to some, let's call it R sub M. For sub R sub M in R is dense. And now apply the diagonalization lemma to this sequence of dense sets. What it gives you that doesn't really give you set A yet, but we are close. So let's see, be such that C slash M belongs to FM for every M in C. Well, this gives us this sequence R sub M for M in C. Well, we can just define C once again to make sure that sequence converges. So find A subset of C infinite such that limit as, how shall I say it, m belongs to a, so m converges to infinity but through a. Is this a good notation, I guess? Clear what I mean? Of this thing, Rm is equal to R for some R. This is just the case d equals 1. And now this set is as required. So as you have S which converges, whose minimum converges to infinity through this set A, then as minimum is getting closer, larger and larger, you're getting closer to this Rm, and then just essentially have convergence equals which converge to another limit. So this set is as required. Okay, so this is a relatively simple idea, but we'll see that it actually goes quite a long way. So let me introduce some definitions from Banach spaces. Definition: a basic sequence UN is K spreading. Here K is some some positive real number. Well, typically bigger than 1. So K is in the interval between 1 and infinity, open. If for every further subsequence, so for any A subset of n to omega, U sub n is K equivalent to subsequence U sub n for n in A. So this is just U sub n for n goes from 1 to infinity. Okay, this is something that you, if you just look at the classical Banach spaces, something that is just natural, you get it for free. If you take C0 or any LP, well, that's what you get. Just if you take any subsequence or basic sequence, there is no difference in the way norm was defined. So actually any basic sequence in any classical Banach space is actually one spreading, and we just say spreading. So one spreading let's say it's lemma. The usual basic sequence in C0 or LP for P bigger equal than 1 is one spreading. But on the other hand, this is not a trivial property of a basic sequence. Simple fact. Well, just say something much weaker than the sequence is spreading. Yes? Oh, what is K equivalent? Well, it means that for any sequence of vectors, for any sequence of scalars, if you compute norm in 1, so sum I goes from 1 to infinity, AI, let's see, how do you call them? Let's call them VI and UI. VI, and compute that norm, it's going to be less or equal than K times sum I go from 1 to infinity, AI times WI, and this is some other norm, so let me just put triple bar. And it's also bigger or equal than 1 over k times that other norm,
sum I goes from 1 to infinity AI WI.
So this is...
No, no, of course not, right? Because, sure, finite sums are enough. Exactly, yes, because you have continuity, sure. Sure, yes. Yes. So this is what we mean by K-space. In particular, it means that binary space are isomorphic. Actually, that mapping from, just natural mapping from one base to the other one extends to isomorphism. It's equivalent to being K-equivalent for some K. So note, if you have a sequence UI and it is equivalent to both U sub 2i and U sub 2i plus 1, then if you just take the even numbered members and odd numbered members and just assume that these three are equivalent, which is much weaker than one spreading, well, then what you get is that the Banach space is isomorphic to its own square. Then X is isomorphic to X squared. So here UI is the basis for X. Is a basis for X. And it is known, it's classical result, I think, of James, that there is a Banach space whose square is not equivalent to itself. So just assume that something is spreading is is non-trivial. Now let me state the theory that I wanted to do today. I call it theorem 1A. I'll state one. Yes. No, it's not. Oh, it just means that if you look at if you look at any basic sequence. Okay. So you mean that does. Yes, I think his example does have a basis, so that's. Let's see. Right, you're right that if his example didn't have a basis, it would not be clear, but I think that it does have a basis. I'm not sure now. Yeah, okay, you're right. I think it has a basis, but I'm not sure. Okay, now we'll see later another example of unconditional basic sequence which is not one spreading. So, before I state the theorem, I just need one more definition. So, basic sequence. A basic sequence U sub n goes from 1 to infinity is asymptotically spreading if there is one spreading basic sequence, call it Vn, n goes from 1 to infinity. Such that for every k and for every epsilon bigger than 0, there is some capital N. So capital N here is just a natural number. It's a member of both S N. With the following property.
such that if you look at sequence un1, un2 up to unk, it is one plus epsilon equivalent to the sequence, the other one was vi goes from 1 to k whenever big N is less than N1, less than N2, and so on up to NK. So what this means is just that, well, for if you wanted the sequence to be precise enough, and if you bound the length of the sequence, so here you have, don't have just any finite sequence, but of some length k, then after some capital N, any basic sequence of length at most k is going to be 1 plus epsilon equivalent to the one that you have fixed in advance. So this seems to be quite close to actually being one spreading. Well, this sequence vi is called a spreading model for ui. So then vi, I goes from 1 to infinity, is spreading model for ui, I goes from 1 to infinity. So just in the illustration, let me state a lemma. Okay, so some basic sequence in L1 is a spreading model for a basic sequence of Cyrosman space. This is actually not so difficult to prove. You can try to check it. So you see, we saw before that Cyrosman space does not contain a copy of L1. But however, it was yes, right. So it's an example of Banach space doesn't contain infinite dimensional copy of any of L1 or any LP or C0. But yet it has L1 as spreading model. Okay. I think we'll be coming back to it later on. So what is theorem 1A? It's due to Brunel and Sacheston. Says that if un is a basic sequence or in some Banach space, then it has a subsequence with subsequence that is asymptotically spreading. So no matter how you pick a sequence in any Banach space, you can always go to a further subsequence, not even block sequence, but just by going to further subsequence, you can get something that is quite nice in this way here. So for any k and for any epsilon, if you just go high enough, then any 2K blocks behave pretty much the same, as far as the norm is concerned. Yes.
What you're saying there is that every, you've got a basic sequence in any bound space,
then there's
a one-spreading basic sequence
in that bound space. No, 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 it just, I see, I never said that this sequence is in the same space as this one.
Oh.
So it's just somewhere.
Right.
So maybe I should, just to make it clear, so this one is in X, and this one is in some Y. So they come from different places. So it's just some sequence in some banner space. It's actually pretty much a consequence of the simple M over there. But as I said, there is one A that also get to one B. So proof. For every K in N, let dk be a finite subset of a closed interval 0, 1 to the kth power that is 1 over k dense. In L1 metric. So what I mean by that is just that for every for every A1 up to AK in 0, 1 to K, there is some B1 up to BK in DK such that some I goes from 1 to K. Absolute value of AI minus BI is less than 1 over K. Okay, so we fix this DK. And now, for each element of DK, we're going to define a function that is going to be plugged into the lemma in just the obvious way. So let's say fix K. And also fix how shall I call it? Let's call it P in DK. So P is equal to P1 up to PK. Now define F sub P that maps K element subsets of N into the reals by F sub P of some set S, actually let me call it somehow. Well, S is equal to the following. Well, what we do is we just take coordinates of P and use them as coordinates of our vector and compute the norm. And S is being used to get indexes of the basic vectors. So it's just going to be norm of some over all I go from 1 to k of pi times vectors we called u. Huh? So it's u sub s of I. So here s is just enumerated as s of 1, s of 2 up to s of k, and this is increasing enumeration. So we have a function. So for each k element subset of natural numbers, we just form this vector. They take coordinates of p, use them as coordinates of a vector, compute the norm. Now, since we have a triangle inequality, know that at the range of fp is going to be bounded. So note, absolute value of fp of s is going to be at most sum I goes from 1 to k of pi. Because I'm assuming that sequence is normalized Bayesian sequence, which I never said, but I'm going to add that. Of course, without this, the theorem is quite easily false. So we have this. And therefore, we can apply lemma. So what it tells us is that for any fixed p, we can find infinite subset such that this fp of s converges somewhere as minimum s approaches to infinity. And dk is finite. So we have only finitely many things to take care of at the kth stage. K be all infinite subsets of natural numbers such that for every p in dk, limit as minimum of s approaches to infinity and s belongs to a to k of fp of s exists. So this set is dense. Well, now by diagonalization lemma, we can find an infinite set such that that diagonalizes all of these. So by diagonalization, pick A in n to omega such that A slash K belongs to FK for all K in A. Let's see. Maybe I should have been a little bit more careful about epsilons at this point. I just know that these guys are converging. Actually, I want them to converge fast enough. So once I get to kth stage, I actually want them to be within epsilon distance of the limit. So let me just do it slightly more carefully. So actually, what I really want is fk prime subset of fk such that fk prime is all a in n to omega, such that not only does this limit exist, limit minimum s approaches to infinity, where s is in a to k fp of s, it is equal to some something, let's call it R sub s. And for each s in... Sorry? R p, thank you. Right, sure. Yes. Right. Thanks. R p, and for every s that belongs to, which is k element subset of A but not k. Oh, okay, I had too many k's. No, actually, this is fine, yes. Right, it's the same k. So for any s, which is k element subset of A, which starts late enough, fp of s minus rp is less than 1 over k. So we just shrink it a little bit. And so get A so that A slash K belongs to FK prime. Now what it means? Well, it means that if you fix any K, then if you look at any two K blocks of elements of A that start after that K, they are pretty much the same. Difference at most one, or actually two over K. Well, at least if you're picking elements from DK. But DKs are getting more and more dense. And norm is a Lipschitz function. So actually, if you have any K element subset of 0, 1, sorry, not, okay, let me do this formally. And I just want to claim that, what I have so far has some properties. Remember that C00 is a set of all finite linear combinations of basic unit vectors. So it's sum I goes from 1 to infinity AI VI such that for all but finitely many I, AI is equal to 0. Now, I'm going to define a norm on this space. So for some vector V that belongs to C00, so let's say, how does V look like? Well, V is sum I goes from 1 to K AI times EI for some K. How I'm going to define the norm of this guy? Well, let's see, it's new norm. Just say sum I goes from 1 to K AI EI, I'll just put it to be F P of S, sorry, which is RP. So in the case that P is equal to A1 up to AK. Now, of course, there are only countably many vectors for which I define norm in this way. But then, just by the fact that we have a norm in the original space, it's not difficult to prove that you have additivity, sub-additivity, and also multiplication by scalar behaves in the way that you would expect. So I'll just leave the obvious checking. So this defines the norm on a dense subset of, this defines norm only if all the AIs are less equal than 1. But of course, you can just extend it in obvious way to bigger vectors. So on a dense subset of the unit ball of C00. So I'll just say check. It's not too exciting. And now, what does, so just extend it to normal C0. Well, dense actually in even in L1 topology. Right, even in L1, because that's how I chose this case. So even in L1. Essentially, you can assume that it's for all rational numbers that is defined, because you can just define DKs to actually hit any finite tuple of rationals. So it's going to be dense in whatever you want. So extend it to C00 and take the completion. Okay. And let's call it completion Y. Now if you look at this sequence EI, I goes from 1 to infinity, which comes from C00, well, this is one spreading. Why? Well, exactly because the norm on this set is defined no matter where you go, it's the same for... okay, so let me just... simply norm of sum I goes from 1 to k of ai ei is equal to the norm sum I goes from 1 to k ai eni. So if n1 less than n2 and so on up to nk. This can be checked just by referring back to the original space, because just if they're spaced out in the right way, they're going to behave as you want. So it's and this is true with equality for any finite sequences. So if you just go to infinite sequences, you get you still get equality. So and also by the choice of these epsilons, we get that actually this is a spreading model for original for that subsequence. So and this is the spreading model for the subsequence, which is given by the set A. So those vectors for I think U n for n in A. If you look at this proof, you can notice that I have never really used the fact that UNs form the basic sequence. Well, apart from the fact that if it's not, then just simply this norm may collapse in some way. Just imagine if XN was the same vector all the time, this would be quite, it would be a, well, just a subnorm. It could be zero at some non-trivial cases. But definitely all the everything except just concluding that this norm is non-trivial doesn't use the fact it's basic sequence. But now, if we assume a little bit more about sequence X sub n, we can get a bit more about this, about the way that this space Y looks like. So let me just remind you. So a basic sequence, let's call it UI goes from 1 to n, is unconditional if, well, whenever you take a norm of something like this, we can just look at finite factors. Again, if you have sum I goes from 1 to k of ai ui, and if you have sum I goes from 1 to k, when you, let's see which definition I'm using, and you just omit that guy, ai ui, for I different from some I zero, well, this one is bigger than the other. So just omitting one vector makes the norm smallest. Again, this is a property that every natural abundant space has it. but it implies, for example, that the space can be decomposed as a direct sum of two subspaces, infinite-dimensional subspaces. So, for example, what Piotr was talking about last 2 days, his space doesn't have unconditional basis sequence, which is more difficult than getting a space that does have one. The space that he constructed doesn't have an unconditional basis, but it may have unconditional basis sequence. So if you go to further infinite-dimensional subspace, you may get it. But there are even spaces without unconditional basis sequence. Here is theorem 1b. Okay, so again, also due to Brunel and Sacheston. It's actually just the same theorem, I just split it in two pieces to actually see what is the Ramsey part, what is the other part. So in theorem 1a, if the sequence, I think I called it U sub n, the original one, it goes from 1 to infinity, is weakly null, then the spreading model is unconditional. So if we have a basic sequence which is normalized, yet for any in weak topology it converges to zero, so for any function on the space, just values on these points converge to zero, well, then once you get construct this space, it turns out to have unconditional basis. And no matter what space you started with. You see, any space has a basic sequence, so you can apply Brunel-Sacheston, you can get a spreading model, and that spreading model is going to have an unconditional sequence, even though the space that you have on the other side is maybe hereditarily indecomposable. Here is a proof. I'm just continuing where I started here, where I stopped here. So what we have in sequence un, n goes from 1 to infinity, and en, n goes from 1 to infinity, where En is spreading, and for every epsilon bigger than zero, for every k in n, there is n such that the sequence u n I goes from 1 to k, is k equivalent. Is k equivalent to e1, I goes from 1 to k if big N is less than n1, less than n2, etc., up to nk. Now, the property of weakly null sequences that I'm going to use is a classical result of Mazur, which says that if you have a sequence of vectors that weakly converge to zero, then you can find the convex combinations of those vectors that converge to zero in norm. Sorry? Oh, I mean one. Oh, okay, actually, I mean, right, thank you, sure. I mean 1 plus what? Epsilon, okay, thank you. Right, so k is what? You can compute k is 1 plus epsilon, I think. Right. Okay. by a theorem of Stanislav Mazur. We can find convex combinations of this sequence ui, I goes from 1 to infinity, that converge to 0 in norm. I'm not going to prove this, I'm just going to say that actually this can also be proved using some combinatorics. Not really Ramsey theory, but there is a proof due to Vlastimil Ptak that uses quite interesting combinatorics, and it is in Stelo's book Topics in Topology. So if he had more time, he would do that as well. So let's see, convex combinations, let me give them some names. Let's call them Z sub m, for m goes from 1 to infinity. And actually I want to be a little bit more precise about them. Since I'm free to pick next convex combination as far along the these UIs as I want, I can write Zi to be sum, J goes from sum pi to pi plus 1 minus 1 of gamma j u sub j. So here p1 less than p2 less than and so on. So how do we do it? Well, so in any weakly convergent set we can find the convex combination arbitrarily small norm. Also just find one which is small enough, and then throw out the vectors u so far, look at the next, what is left, find another one, and so on. So we can get them to look like this. Ah, but of course, as I said, convex. So each gamma j is bigger or equal than 0, and sum of gamma j's, j goes from pi to pi plus 1 minus 1 is equal to 1. okay, so now we want to check the unconditionality. So we just fix, it's enough to check this for finite vectors. So just fix some vector. So fix vector ai ei, I goes from 1 to k, and fix some I0, which is between 1 and k. So we want to check condition star, which is the one from definition of unconditional basic sequence. Fine. Now, of course, how do you check that one number is bigger than the other? Well, you pick a small enough delta and prove that sum of the bigger one with delta is bigger or equal than the smaller one. So I'm going to use that. So pick delta bigger than 0, and actually I'm going to pick epsilon, which is also smaller than delta. I'm not sure. We'll see how much exactly. Something like delta over ai 0 times 2 or something like that. We'll see. Okay. Now find k such that 1 over k is such that k is bigger than 1 over epsilon. So we want to be high enough. And find n, capital N, that works for this k and epsilon. And n of k and epsilon. What I mean by n of k and epsilon is, of course, this one. I should have called it n of k comma epsilon. Now, we also have these PIs. And so let me call them PMs, because I'm going to need index I for other purposes. So find n so that when we add I zero to capital N, what we get is still less than P sub N. So I want to have enough room. Now here is the picture. Here is N, and there we have U sub N, which we're not really going to use. Here is P sub N. Somewhere here is P sub N plus 1. N plus I 0 comes before P sub N. So we have a room before it. And also, of course, after P N plus 1, we have as much room as we want. So form the following vectors. Let's see how many indexes do we have. Okay, gamma j is run from P M to P M plus 1 minus 1. So for each one of those j's, for j, that is between T M and P M plus 1 minus 1, we are going to define a vector W j. And how is it going to look like? Well, the initial segment of WJ will finish before PM. The initial segment meaning sum I goes from 1 to I0 minus 1. Remember, I0 is the coordinate that we have to take special care of. So this will be AI times, here we have u sub n plus I. The next part is just going to be a sub I zero times u sub j. So u sub j is one of the vectors somewhere in the middle of this interval between pm and pm plus 1. And then the end of the vector, sum I goes from, let's see, I0 plus 1 to k. AI u sub what? Well, something, u sub pm plus 1 plus I guess. Let's see. Does it make sure that, okay, it's just important it is outside of this interval. Just let me give some names to these vectors. Let's call this one, what's a good name? X. This one is X. And this one is Y. So vector X is here, and vector Y is here. And X and Y don't depend on J. They're the same for each WJ. Let's see. So what is sum j goes from pm to pm plus 1 minus 1 of gamma j wj? Well, what we are doing is multiplying x by each of gamma j, adding them up together. And remember, gamma j's add up to 1. So I can just skip that computation and just say, well, this is x. What happens in the middle? Well, we have each of uj's. We have uj times ai0. and coordinate is the same all the time over there. So we have plus AI 0 times sum j goes from Pn to Pn plus 1 minus 1. And here we have gamma j uj plus, well, at the end again we have just y. Okay, so what about the norm of this vector? Now let's see, I have to be careful, this is, we are doing norm in the original space. So it's just double bar. So, norm, sum j goes from Pm, Pm plus 1 minus 1, gamma j wj, is at most norm of x plus y plus ai 0 times norm. What is this? Well, this vector is actually z sub n. I call it z sub n. Norm of z sub m. Now let's see, I never said how fast z sub m's are converging to 0 in norm, and I should have said that, I guess. So I can just add that. Remember, just we can make this as small as we can, so I'll just go back and make sure it is going to be as small as we want, so find k, da da da. And so that, sorry, when find m, so that this happens, and norm of z sub m is less than what? Less than epsilon. So this is less or equal than norm. By the way, x plus y, what is that? Well, it's just one of the vectors that we started with. So it's sum I goes from 1 to, well, actually, not quite. Let's just write it as x plus y. Plus ai 0 times epsilon. Now, let's see, I think we should be essentially done at this point. So far, I just use the fact that these zm's are converging to 0 in norm. But I have to use this equivalence, approximate equivalence of two sequences. So just need to jump back and check how norms of wj's look like as far as the other space is concerned, the spreading model. So what is norm of each wj minus sum I goes from 1 to k, ai ei? Well, this one is less than epsilon for each j. So using the fact that EI is a spreading model, I should ignore that, using that epsilons are chosen in the right way. Now let's see, what do we have now? So let's see, you're absolutely right. Yes, you're right. Now I just see, so how do I do that? I say bigger or equal than this and this and this. Okay, so I have to correct this one also. Thank you, I think. Yes, that's right, sure. Should I want to make that one? Thank you, sure. So it's, okay, you can just say, so you just greater or equal than x plus y, thank you, minus ai 0 times epsilon, okay. And now let's see, I think we just have to add up a few things here. So each wj has norm which is close to this. Well, we have added several of them. So what is this? Let's see. Let's see. I think it should be nine at this point. I just have to figure out what to put there. So,
well, you've got the form of the sigma gamma j w j. It gets going to be equal to, you need a bit more extension of the big left there. Less than or equal to sigma gamma j norm w j.
Here.
Well,
in the first line.
In the middle line.
Yes.
To the left.
Oh, to the left. Uh-huh. Okay. Yes. So this is less or equal then. I mean, just replace them with these ones?
Well, sigma gamma j norm w j.
Sigma gamma j, yes?
Okay.
Oh, just that, I see. Aha, okay, right, sure, thank you. Right, j goes from Pm to Pm plus 1 minus 1. We have, okay, gamma j is a positive, we have to put gamma j norm of w j. Right. And I have convex combination, so it's not going to spoil the constant. Sure. Thank you. So right. Let's see. Ah, thank you. You're absolutely right. Yeah, sure, of course. Right. That's right. So I just well, actually, okay. From the way what I got there, I'm actually getting this. But from the definition I'm getting, so just question is, am I continuing the previous proof? Because I just defined actually norm in this way. Right, okay, so let's see. I'll just put to know that I'm continuing the proof of theorem. I'm quite sure that in the quotient one can just do something, but we'll just probably need some different epsilons. So continuing the proof of theorem 1a using the construction. Right. And so now, let's see. So what do we have? Norm of x plus y minus ai0 epsilon is less or equal than sum j goes from pm to pm plus 1 minus 1 gamma j times these ones times epsilon times sum I goes from 1 to k ai ei plus epsilon, and this is just equal to norm sum I goes from 1 to k ai ei plus epsilon, because gamma j is up to 0, so we're done. And so we just make sure that so delta here is epsilon times 1 plus ai 0. Okay, so we do have unconditional model here. Let me just end with a few remarks on Cyrosson space. So I'm going to try definition once again. So Cyrosson space norm is defined recursively. So norm 0 of sum I goes from 1 to k ai ei is just sup of absolute values of ai, and m plus first norm of this is just the maximum of the previous norm. Sum I goes from 1 to k, ai ei sub n, and the sup of all things of the form 1 half sum j goes from 1 to l of norm of, well, this vector, just keep on copying, sum I goes from 1 to k ai ei restricted to set ej, where sup is taken over all finite intervals e1 less than e2 less than el, where l is equal to minimum of e1. Previous one. So the way the norm is constructed here is just you're using a tree. So you just split into a few pieces, compute norm at each one, and go further. So we proved last summer that this space does not contain isomorphic copy of any classical Banach space, C0 or any LP. And as I mentioned, it has L1 as a spreading model. Simply norm is quite similar to L1. So we can check that. But then, okay, so, but what about this space? Is it spreading, this basic sequence, is it spreading or not? It turns out that it's quite quite curious things are going on with it.
Sorry, yes.
Oh, okay, I forgot I should say what is on, yes. Huh? Intervals, although, if I'm assuming that maximum of E1 is less than minimum E2, so it doesn't really matter. You can just put them to be whole. Right. So they're intervals.
Right. They're
Disjoint intervals.
And the smallest one, the minimum is actually
as well. Yes. So it just tells you how far you can go. And I actually forgot to define the norm. So what is normal sum X? Well, it's just a sup over all N of these norms. So what is interesting about Cyrilson space is that well, I should call it lemma. So if EI is the natural basis for T, which is for Cyrilson space, then, well, EI is actually equivalent to E2I. This, and actually a bit more, was proved by Casaza, Johnson, and Zaffieri. And Casaza asked the question, so is actually the basis in Cyrilson space subsymmetric? So if you just pick any basic sequence, do you get the equivalent norm? Note that it's easy to see it. If you have a sequence which is a bit faster than the original one, norm is going to be bigger. Because you see what the only dependence on the position to computational norm is this fact that you have minimum E1. So if you're starting later, minimums are going to be bigger, you're going to get bigger norms. So question is, are you getting much bigger or boundedly bigger in some way? Or what? And this was resolved by Delano, I guess. Why small? I mean,
the calculation of the norm is
Smaller if you're in a slower sequence, yes. No. You see, they're just not EI and E2I. They're just, see, how do you compute? Well, look at these vectors, for example. You see, norm does grow. Consider the vector 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, 0. Norm of this one is going to be 2. Because you don't have much choice. Norm is going to be 1. Because the soup norm is 1. In next turn, you can just take two intervals, add up once, divide by 2, well, that's 1 again, and you're not getting anything bigger than that. So norm of this guy is 1. But now, if you spread it out, so if you're looking at E2i instead of, you see, what corresponds to switching to E2i? Well, 0th coordinate goes to 0, this one you just padded. 1, let's see, this one is, 1 goes to the 4th. This is 2nd coordinate goes to 4th, right? Oh, actually, in this guy I'm not getting anything new. But let's see if I get, actually I should have taken this example. Okay, 1, 1. Okay, soup norm of this one is 1, and the regular norm is 1 again. I don't think I'm getting there. If I add one more 1 here, what is the norm of this one? It's still going to be 1. But the soup norm is 1. When you go to next level. It's 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, 1. So here, norm is definitely going to be 3 halves. No, it's not.
Well, but you certainly got a bit more scope
in your EJ. I got a bit more scope, but I have to hook up a vector which actually shows that I'm getting a different norm.
But also a vector in the first norm, and
but in first norm, it's different, you see. But you just, this is supposed to be isomorphism. You see, I'm talking about case that EI is isomorphic to E2I, which means that, you know, if you just pad the vector with zeros. Let's see, I should be able to cook up a vector that actually comes up differently in these two. Let's see, if it just starts late enough, maybe. So let's see, if I just put 0 here and 1 here, that comes up as this one. 0 and 1 here. Okay, so norm of this one is going to be 3 halves. And I hope that norm of this one is 1. I'm not sure about that. I think it is, yes. Sure, it is 1. So this is a... So norm does grow when you go to this. So here is the result of diagnosis. So it's going to grow, but how quickly? Well, this result says that if you just sped up with each second to be 0, it doesn't go... You have a constant which bounds it. Diano says the following, that EI is equivalent to E sub f of y, I, if and only if there is a primitive recursive function G that dominates F pointwise. Well, F is increasing. I mean, of course, I'm assuming here that F is increasing. I mean, otherwise, it doesn't make sense. Was that the content of your objection?
Sorry?
It's strange dot. Yes. That's true. That's true. That's but it doesn't mean it's not. So actually, I mean, the way it's proved is you just iterate some obvious functions and prove that for each one of those obvious functions, while you iterate it, norm jumps somewhat for some fixed constant. So as long as you're primitive recursive, it's not going to jump too much. And then you just prove it. If it's too fast, it's actually going to disintegrate. So now just if you think about it a little bit more, it's very natural. So this shows that the Tiersch space is quite strange, and that also theorems I was proving today are not, I mean, they do have some content in the sense that it's not, so for Tiersch one, you can just get L1 as a spreading model, although this is not so. And as a matter of fact, there are more results which show that if you have any subspace, any block subspace of Tiersch space, it's actually, if you have normalized basis, it is going to be equivalent to something like this. So there aren't that many different subspaces of Tiersch space. So they are just indexed by increasing functions. If you just look at block subspaces, they're all pretty much the same. They simply have their place somewhere in hierarchy of ordering on omega to the omega. Okay, so that was all for today. Now, next week there is no lecture, and the next lecture is on 23rd or something, Monday, whatever it is. Monday, 2 days from now, which happens to be the time when the exercise is due. Also, yes, please. I know some of you who are taking this course. So if somebody else is taking it for credit and they didn't talk to me, so please come talk to me so that we can, so that I can get to know you. And so on. Okay.